You think Fasig Tipton, you think Terrence Collier. In many ways, he's been the voice and face of one of the world's most famous sales companies since 1976. By way of Cobham, England, he's been a huge part of American racing for over 40 years. Collier is this week's guest on the Thoroughbred Daily News podcast, brought to you by TaylorMade.
And here it is! The 37-year wait is over! American Pharoah is finally the one! American Pharoah has won the Triple Crown!
Over the past four decades, TaylorMade has risen from a small boarding operation to the worldwide leader in thoroughbred sales and marketing. Here's Hall of Fame trainer Jerry Hollendorfer.
TaylorMade sales follow many horses that are training at the racetrack, and they are particularly adept at evaluating mares and placing them with a proper stallion after their racing careers are over. They are very straightforward and are also experts on confirmation of younger weanlings and yearlings.
My name is Tia Andrini, and I am from San Mateo, California. I've been doing business with TaylorMade for about a year now, and it's been one great experience after another. It started with my first TaylorMade venture when I bought an interest in the filly Catherine Sophia, which ultimately landed me 3 weeks later in the middle of the winner's circle of the 2016 Kentucky Oaks with her. The TaylorMade team is a group of truly outstanding individuals. They are knowledgeable, professional, and completely customer service driven. To me, the TaylorMade name epitomizes the term trusted advisor. That is exactly what they are, and I am very proud to be associated and doing business with them.
Discover what TaylorMade can do for you. Visit TaylorMadeFarm.com.
Welcome back. This is Bill Finley with this week's TDN podcast. And with Fasig Tipton Saratoga sale right around the corner, it's a good time to catch up with Terrence Collier, who for many years has been Fasig Tipton's head announcer. But it's always a good time to catch up with Terrence Collier. He's a walking encyclopedia when it comes to the sales and the industry. We welcome you, Terrence. And first question, let's get into a little bit of your background, because as we mentioned earlier, you've been a big part of American racing, and particularly the sales scene since 1976. So how does someone who comes from what you described as a small village named Cobham in Kent, England, make his way all the way to America and become part of the horse racing industry?
Bill, that was a rather grandiose introduction
thank
for me,
you.
But thank you very much indeed for the compliment. It was a strange way to get into the horse business. I was in the Merchant Navy at that time and was at that time working for Cunard and traveling backwards and forwards between England and New York, mainly on the Queen Mary. And one long overlay in Southampton, I went on a blind date with one of my crewmates and met my now wife of 40-plus years, Elizabeth, on that date. And she very kindly allowed me to stay with her parents for a little while, but after about 4 weeks, she got fed up with me, and she found me a job through her job working on a stud farm in Newmarket. And that kindled a relationship with a man called Michael Oswald, who was the Queen's stud manager for a number of years. And he put me to work in Newmarket at Lordship Stud, and that's how it all began.
Okay, so that's how you got involved in racing, but what brought you then to America, and in particular, how did you come aboard with Fasig Tipton?
The job that they found for me in Newmarket was found by a wonderfully gentleman called Colonel Frank Beale of the BBA, and Colonel Beale was a very good friend of Humphrey Finney, and Humphrey, who was at that point the chairman of Fasig Tipton and was somewhat close to retirement at that stage. He used to come to England, notably for the Newmarket December sales, acting for clients, and needed chauffeuring around and needed help and assistance while he was in Newmarket. And the BBA allocated me as his very unworthy chauffeur and tea boy, and I took care of Humphrey and later John. And it was through that first introduction with Humphrey and John that eventually in 1975, I think it was, I was offered a job. It took us about a year to get the paperwork sorted out. So don't think that all of the visa problems that people are having today are something new. They were just as bad then.
Right.
And I ended up in the Elmont office. Phasic was based on the backside at Belmont Park at that point. And I showed up before Christmas in 1976 and began my career with them.
Okay. Now, you're born in England. You lived for a while in New York, and I'm sure you've lived for the last many years in Kentucky. Are you today a Kentuckian? Are you an Englishman? Are you a New Yorker? A little bit of all three?
I think I'm just confused. I identified very strongly with New York because it was the start of a wonderful career for me in the horse business, and the backstretch at Belmont, which was literally 100 yards from the front door of Phasic Tipton at that time, was populated by the most incredible bunch of horsemen. I mean, it was the era of Woody Stevens, Mac Miller, John Veitch, Elliot Birch, you name it, they were there. And all of the big stables were in full operation. So every day was like literally walking through the Hall of Fame. And so I identified very strongly. I was there for 12 years. I've been through four different changes of ownership of the company. And it was when the company was sold again in 1989 that the then owners moved the company from Belmont to Phasic Tipton's headquarters in Lexington. And I have enjoyed every stage of that. So I don't know what I am, but I would be honored to be considered somebody that lives in Kentucky. I think that I would insult probably every Kentuckian if I claimed to be a Kentuckian. So, no, I'll just settle with I live in Kentucky.
Understood. So, Terrence, you've been away from England for an awful long time. Do you have any roots there? Do you have any family there? And what do you miss most about your time growing up there and living in England?
You know, I don't really miss very much about it. I do get a chance to go back there fairly frequently. I've been a regular visitor to Royal Ascot for about the last 35, 40 years. It has changed very much and has left me behind. I have one aging aunt and a cousin there, and there's really nothing about England that I miss because I'm able to go back two or three times a year and enjoy seeing all my friends. And but I'm strongly settled in the United States. I have been a citizen for some time, and really I'm very happy to contemplate the future in the United States and don't regret any part of my move out of England.
Well, we'll talk racing and the sales with Terrence Collier when we return on this week's TDN podcast brought to you by TaylorMade.
TaylorMade, where customer success is our primary focus.
Ladies and gentlemen, we present Harvard of Grace.
7-10, you want to get 10 million, Hunter, right here, we're going to get out of the mats away now, 10, 10 to 10, here we're going to get out of the mat, we're going to get 10. Bruce, right here, $10 million even.
TaylorMade, where customer success is our primary focus. But don't take our word for it. Here's what some of our most satisfied customers have to say.
This is Brian Kahn, Los Angeles, California. I've been associated with, worked for, and been a client of TaylorMade and the TaylorMade family for close to 30 years now. Had great success with them. They've always been transparent and honest, and I always felt I was getting the right end of the deal with them. Highly recommend their services from boarding, public sales, private sales. I've used all. All have been a success and a pleasure to deal with.
Here's longtime TaylorMade client Rick Porter of Fox Hill Farms, owner of numerous champions and Grade 1 winners, such as 2011 Horse of the Year, Havre de Grace.
I've been doing business with TaylorMade for over 20 years. Everyone knows they are the best sellers at auction, but they have also done great work for me in the private market. They have an unbelievable network that can help you buy or sell privately in a very professional and transparent way. I wish I had these guys working for me when I was in the car business.
Discover what TaylorMade can do for you. Visit TaylorMadeFarm.com.
Well, in that TaylorMade ad, you just heard one of the more electric moments in Phasic Tipton history, the sale of a Horse of the Year, Havre de Grace. Let's listen in for some more of that momentous occasion.
shown the greatest decorum all the time she's been here. This is an unusual situation for any thoroughbred to come into this ring with this wonderful but appreciative crowd. And we couldn't be more appreciative than we are of Mr. Porter for allowing us to offer this wonderful mare. There's not much more I can say that wasn't so well presented on that tailor-made video. Let me just say this. There's an old William Shakespeare saying that some are born great, some have greatness thrust upon them, and some achieve greatness. And Harvard of Grace achieved greatness. In her race record, the reason that she was Horse of the Year was that she won just about everything that they put in front of her.
And you just heard Terrence Collier talking about Harvard of Grace 2012 Phasic Tipton November sale, consigned by TaylorMade, our sponsor. She sold for $10 million. And Terrence, in my notes, I wrote electric. Is that a good way to describe that moment? How did it feel selling a horse for $10 million?
It wasn't the first time that it had happened, because I was fortunate enough to be in the auction stand in Florida at the Calder two-year-old sales when we sold the Green Monkey. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't the first time that I'd had that same feeling. I think the difference was that our November sale in Kentucky provides a stage for a wonderful show. The rest of our sales are horse sales, even to the same extent that Saratoga is. You don't get the same amount of time or focus or attention as you would do at the November sale. So you are able to spend a little more time extolling the virtues of these wonderful horses, and certainly she's one of the most exciting horses that I've been a part of offering for sale. So she lent herself extremely well to that particular presentation.
Now, a horse that good is going to sell for an awful lot of money no matter what. But your very eloquent speech that you just delivered, and that was only a portion of it that we played leading up to it. Who knows? Might have added some dollars onto that price tag that wound up at $10 million. How much time do you prepare to do something like that and to come up with something like that? Is it somewhat off the cuff, or do you spend the nights before writing up a speech like that?
Oh, no, you couldn't write speeches like that. It would make it all seem so stiff and unnatural. Of course, I knew that I was going to be doing that for some time, and so I had it shaped in my mind, but it was completely off the cuff, as they all are. I mean, I think it's overstating the importance of the announcer if you think that they do anything more than set the stage. I mean, they are no more than part of a huge effort, and the auctioneers certainly are the biggest part of that effort. But when you've got something very special in the ring, you can set an air of tension and an air of competitiveness, and that is really all that you can hope to do.
So you touched on this a little bit, but, you know, and you said, you sort of said in a self-deprecating way that, you know, you don't think that you necessarily contribute to the price, but that's part of your job. I mean, as you work for this company, you want the consigners and the sellers to get as much money in as possible. What, is there any particular trick? It's still a skill. What makes someone good at that, which obviously you are because you've been doing it for so long? What are the secrets to being good at your job?
I think it's longevity more than anything, Bill. I think that you've got to love what you're doing and have a great deal of excitement and commitment to the job, which it never gets dull. I mean, whether it's a $5,000 yearling in October or whether it's a $10 million mare in November, it's still fun to do it. And so the day that it doesn't become fun is the day that somebody should give up. I wish everybody felt that way about everything in life. You know, you've got to have fun doing it. You've got to have commitment. And right now I'm enjoying it every bit as much as I always did. The difference, I think, between day one and my 40-odd years in the stand is that I've made so many contacts in the business that you want to do well for the sellers because they are, first of all, clients, but secondly, friends. You want to engage the buyer because, you know, you see them out there and you know they're keen to do something with you, so you want them to get into the spirit of the competition of the auction. And just to pull those two factors together and to see a satisfactory outcome, sales companies have great ways to spin results. We're always talking about the average being this percent up or the median being this percent up. You know, sales companies are driven by the bottom line. That's where they get their commission. That's what pays the wages. So the enjoyment factor for me, for both the sales company, the seller, and the buyer, is what I call the happiness quotient. And if that's high at a sale, you can walk away from that auction stand, whether the average is up, down, or sideways. And when it's happening for somebody that you've known for a long time and you do a satisfactory job for them, it really does give you a great sense of pride in the small role that you've played in it.
So the next big event for Facek Tipton, of course, is the Saratoga sale on August 8th and 9th. And this is a sale that has always been a great sale, but of late has just produced so many great horses. Four of the last six Belmont winners have come out of this sale. And Terrence, just generally, what makes this sale so successful year after year? Anything other than the obvious that you obviously have a lot of good horses to sell?
Well, I would have to correct you, first of all. The sale is actually on August the 7th and 8th.
Okay, thank you
for
correcting that.
So just make sure that all your readers know, readers and listeners know that. We don't want them to miss the opening night.
That wouldn't be good, now would it?
No. Okay. The second part, I would say, is that, believe it or not, this is the 97th annual Saratoga sale. It's one of the oldest events in the thoroughbred industry. I mean, obviously, it's predated by a lot of racing, but in terms of major events in the industry, this is one of the oldest events. And she's a grand old lady, and she's weathered a lot of storms over the years. And the 2017 catalog is, to me, one of the most exciting that we've had for a long, long time. We've got 227 yearlings in there, and just a nice cross-section of sellers from various parts of the world, mainly from Kentucky, but these horses come from all around the United States. And I think the whole Facek team is very excited about the possibilities. We've had a great start this year. The July sale went very well for us in Kentucky, and we're moving up there sometime next week. We've got good reports on the physicals. We've seen a lot of these yearlings once, twice, and when they get on the grounds the third time. And if they hold up to those original inspections, I think we're headed for a good sale.
Okay. Now, Terrence, in Saratoga in general, not just the sale, but the whole Saratoga experience, it's all about the history, but at the same time, it has to stay relevant and attract a new audience. Now, you could say that if it's the racetrack, if it's the most trendy restaurant in town, or about the sale. So how does Facek Tipton manage that to measure in the history, but to stay modern and relevant and always on the cutting edge? So I guess, what is new, but what if also at the same time stays the same?
When you arrive in Saratoga, I think the overwhelming sense is that time has pretty much stood still up there. Certainly, the historical societies that have protected Saratoga, both the residential parts of town and the historical buildings, they've done a wonderful job in preserving the atmosphere of the town. So, you know, you come up the Northway from Albany, and you turn off there towards the racetrack, and you see the end of the race stand, the grandstand there that's been there for 100 years. You turn right into the sales grounds, and frankly, I haven't noticed a difference. I mean, the same barns on the right-hand side on Oklahoma, the same appearance of the pavilion, albeit updated. But I think there's a sense almost of timelessness in the buildings and the surroundings. So that really doesn't change, and I think that answers your question about what stays the same and what changes. What changes, as you point out, is that you've got to include a new generation of potential buyers, and I think we've got a team of young people headed by Anna Seitz and Max Hodge and Evan Ferraro that have embraced all of the new technologies and used them to make the buyer's experience one of the more pleasant ones if you're attending a major auction. So It's a combination of history, current technology, social media, and enthusiasm for making somebody's visit to Saratoga as good as it can possibly be.
Now, you touched on something that I want you to want to get back to, because again, you know, you're not the only sales company out there. You have competition, and you have to do a lot of things well to be successful. And every business, not just the sales business, is realizing the importance of treating the customer well. Customer, in your case, being the people that sign those tickets. Well, actually, also the sellers as well. But let's focus on the buyers. So I understand that, you know, Faisik Tipton is really doing everything it can to go that extra mile for the buyer. For instance, I understand there's a new buyer's lounge at the sales pavilion this year. So if you just want to talk about, you know, what's new in that aspect and, you know, what the Faisik Tipton team has in mind to make these people feel that they are indeed special.
One of the things that Anna Seitz has been able to do is that she has drawn the racetrack and the town into the sale. In the early years, the sale was in the town and was important to it because at that time all the restaurants were full, many of the houses were rented to people that were either coming to buy or sell. But they saw it as an opportunity to make money, do good business, and then as soon as the sales were over, that was it. It was forgotten for another year. Anna has been able to get a lot of local sponsorship in there. They become partners with us in hospitality. And the Buyer's Lounge is a very good example of pulling those sponsors in with Faisik Tipton and making the buyer's experience a much better deal. I would say that prior to 2000, there were very good facilities in the town, but they were there and the buyers and sellers had to find them. I think nowadays you have to direct the buyers and sellers to them and put the two of them together. We do a lot more work in putting people in hotels. We do a lot more work in putting people in houses. We've got concierge chauffeur services. The restaurant facility there has been upgraded. It has become a much broader experience with a lot more opportunities to interact with transport, hotels, restaurants, which is largely to the credit of Anna.
We'll talk more about the Saratoga sale with Terrence Collier from Faisik Tipton. But first, this commercial from TaylorMade.
M. Shawish has taken the lead as they come into the final 16.
The main reason we ended up trying M. Shawish on the dirt is he was just so impressive in the mornings to watch train on the dirt. And, you know, he continually worked exceptionally well, showed us that, you know, he was able not only to finish his work strongly, but then gallop out brilliantly. And you know, we just felt like he had a dirt pedigree as well, being a Medaglia d'Oro out of a Thunder Gulch mare, that it, you know, wouldn't be a surprise if he ran well in the dirt. And certainly he did.
And it is M. Shawish, the winner of the Don Handicap.
And welcome back to this TDN podcast with Terrence Collier. And Terrence, you guys are not going to be successful if you don't sell good horses. If people buy horses for a lot of money and they don't run on the racetrack, that's not going to look good for Faisik Tipton. So it's one of the very most important parts of the sale is to make sure that there's certain standards that have to be met. So could you go into that? I know it's not exactly your job, but I'm sure you know how it's done. So far as this sale, which is definitely one of the most important, not just for Faisik Tipton, but for any sale in the country, what are the... How does the selection process go so far as both the pedigree and the physical aspects?
Bill, it has changed a lot in the last 30 or 40 years. I was involved in it in the early years as an assistant to both John Finney and Larry Enza, and there was a very extensive selection process, but at a much lower level. These days, we have a selection team led by Bill Graves and very ably assisted by people like Dennis Lynch, Peter Penny, Max Hodge, Bain Welker. They go mainly in Florida, in Kentucky, in New York, Pennsylvania, and they will see these horses in March and April. It's a collaborative process with the people that nominate the horses to the sale. I think people realize that you've got to have a superior yearling to take it to the sale, so they don't waste your time putting up a lot of yearlings that are not going to make the grade physically. So to say that we selected, it's not like we go to a field and we look out over 10 yearlings and we say, ah, I like that one there with the big blaze and the flaxen mane and tail. What happens is that the people basically know what they've got, and they negotiate with us which ones of the high-class horses they've got will come to Saratoga and which ones are going elsewhere. And as you touched on earlier, we have some very lively competition, some very able competition for those selected yearlings. And so we not only have to select them, we then have to make a case for taking them to Saratoga and selling them well. So it's a case of recognizing good physical horses and persuading the people that own them that we are going to go every step of the way to make sure that they do well in the sales ring.
Listen to what we've got going right here. Just Wicked, White Rose, Tonalist, A Lot, all of those right here at Saratoga. By the number one sire with six champions, this Tappet colt is out of that very talented race mare, Appealing Zophie, who won the Grade 1 Spinaway Stakes in very impressive style right here at Saratoga. She is a winner producer. Here's a Tappet colt. He's got the looks. He's got a Grade 1 Stakes winning dam.
Well, if you haven't figured it out already, that was Terrence Collier talking about a then-unknown horse that walked through the ring in 2005, and he turned out to be this year's Belmont Stakes winner, Tappet, who sold for $1.2 million. Terrence, so you said you very much like this catalog. I don't know how much you go into handicapping the sales like somebody might handicap a horse race, but is there another Tappet in this sale? And if so, who are some of the horses that may turn out to wear that mantle of greatness in the future?
Bill, I don't like to contradict you on two occasions, but he came out of the 2015 sale, not the 2005 sale. And, of course, went on to a great career, and we hope that there are many good races in front of him, and how exciting it would be for him to go on and win the Travers at Saratoga for this wonderful group of owners. It's very difficult to tell. I mean, you look at the front cover of this year's catalog, and you've got four horses that sold extremely well, including Tappet, and then you've got Stellar Wind, who's a wonderful racehorse, as you know, on the West Coast. And really, it was very, very hard to find anybody that would show any enthusiasm for her at Saratoga. She did not make a spectacular sales price, much to the disappointment of her co-breeder, Peggy Augustus of Keswick Stables, who had been one of our greatest sellers at Saratoga for decades, and saw this lovely filly that she'd bred go through there for a bargain basement price. So we're not all experts. We don't see them all. And I am confident that there's going to be several Grade 1 Stakes winners coming out of this book. But it would take an enormous ego to be able to say that one of them is going to be another Tappet.
Well, Terrence, thank you for correcting me. We always want to get this right. I realize from what I said, Tappet would have won, under my scenario, the Belmont Stakes as a 13-year-old had he sold in 2005. So that would have been quite an accomplishment. But yes, that, of course, did not happen. Okay, so from my rudimentary knowledge of this aspect of the business, I'm more a racehorse handicapper than a handicapper of the sales. I can just see two horses that you must be looking at, or the whole team must be looking at, that you're very proud to be selling. One is A Distorted Humor, Half to Overanalyze. The other is by Uncle Mo, and is a half brother to Connect. Certainly, if these horses look the part as well, these have to be seven-figure horses, or at least in that neighborhood. Would you agree?
Well, it's a very difficult game to predict. Okay. You've heard what has now become a stock phrase, it's got to tick all the boxes. Mm-hmm. And we use that phrase too freely. And it is not easy for a horse to achieve that status. They've got to be acceptable on their physical conformation. But I would say that probably 95% of the yearlings that walk into that ring are acceptable on their physical conformation. They've got to meet every possible criteria of any number of veterinarians that do two things. They scope them to see that they're breathing adequately, that they've got a good breathing apparatus, and then they look at their radiographs to make sure that there are no issues that they see that might hinder the horse's racing career. So once they've cleared those three hurdles and they walk into that ring, that's when the fireworks start. And that's only if the pedigree has done what you think it's going to do from February to August the 7th and 8th. So it's really tough for a horse to achieve a seven-figure sales price, particularly these days. We've seen a profusion of partnerships spring up, including the one which purchased Taprit, where 10 years ago you might have had two or three of the major international buyers bidding against each other, and we were selling $5 million yearlings. It's a different game. Seven figures is a big, big number for any thoroughbred at auction these days.
Interesting. So, Terrence, let's turn away from Saratoga for a bit, because before we let you go, I definitely want to touch on this. Faisik Tipton is entering a new era on, and oh gosh, I hope I didn't get another date wrong, September 10th, Turf Showcase Sale. And this is a fascinating new sale that is going to specialize in grass horses, the first time ever such a sale has been held in America. How is it lining up? What have you heard so far? And what do you think of this concept?
You hit the date dead right the third time, Bill. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And it's a long way ahead, too. Sunday, September the 10th, we'll see the first of our turf showcases, and it will feature 171 yearlings with a strong connection to the turf. I mean, there will be some that people will look at it and say, how on earth do they say that that's a turf specialist? But there will be an explainable link in the pedigree to the fact that this is a candidate for grass racing. How did it come about? It came about because some very clever guy who wishes to remain nameless came to us one day and said, do you know how many graded stakes are run on grass? Do you know how many grade one stakes are run on grass? Do you know how many races? There has been an explosion of popularity for grass racing in this country. And it wasn't well served, because if you had a grass horse, it was competing with every other dirt pedigree in the book, and somebody had to seek it out. And we felt that it is a niche market, there's no question. It's a very special, very small market, and we had an opportunity to find a date where a lot of people are going to be in town, and we're going to present 171 horses. I don't see it ever growing greatly in number, but I do see it growing in popularity and in quality. We've got a great start. I mean, we've got most of the leading turf sires are represented and well represented. So, you know, you've got Kitten's Joy and Warfronts there, who have been on the forefront of this turf revolution in the last 5 to 10 years. And I've always been an enthusiast. I think it's a great time for it. The industry has responded well to it. The Europeans will be coming over to Pinhook to take some of these horses back to run and to sell in Europe. So all of the things are combining at this stage perfectly well. But as you touched on a little earlier, nothing determines the success of a sale except for the quality of the horses that you're offering. And I'm hoping that the horses meet the hype. We hope they will. We've worked very, very diligently to come up with good physical horses. And so if it all comes together, it's a great idea. As you say, it's a new idea. And we're very, very proud of it.
And Terrence, I know stallions are not necessarily what we're talking about on this podcast, but I'm interested because you have a very good take on this. And we're actually taping this on the day of the Eddie Reed Handicap. And that's a perfect example of the winner of that race. Now it's a grade two, but it used to be a grade one. Mm-hmm. Really, to win that race would do nothing for a stallion, at least in North America, to advance them as a hot stallion prospect. With between your sale and the fact that, you know, grass racing is becoming more and more popular at all times in America, do you see that shifting as well? Might the winner of the Arlington Million in the future become a lot more coveted as a stallion in the United States than they might have in the past?
Bill, I think it depends on a number of factors, but yes, I think that this is going to give people an opportunity to market horses that aren't specialists. I think it's a distance thing. I think you've got to get a horse that's also got speed. So that precludes some of the longer turf races, which is obviously what many of them are written in that format. But you take somebody like Ken Ramsey, who has soldiered very long and very hard and very successfully with Kitten's Joy and has done very, very well with the horse, but has struggled to get the industry to accept that with a $150,000 stud fee, the yearlings ought to be selling much better. But they go out and perform year after year, day after day on the racetrack, mainly on grass, and he's been one of the leading turf sires now since he had adequate numbers to represent him. And I think that people are beginning to believe in horses like Kitten's Joy. So I'm pretty confident that that will shuffle down the line. And when somebody has got a specialist grass horse, I think that those sort of horses are going to come over and come to the stud barns and be much more acceptable. I think it also will allow some of the American stud masters, and think back to the days of John Gaines, of Bull Hancock, of Leslie Combs, that would draw, and of course E.P. Taylor, but think of the grass horses that they brought from Europe and what a revolution that brought about in this business. I mean, who would ever thought that a horse like Le Fabula that stood at Claiborne, no, he stood, I think, at Spencer, I'm not quite sure, but a pure grass horse came over here when grass racing was not popular and established himself as a leading sire. Herbiger, another one of them. Northern Dancer, another one of them. It presages well for an expansion of international trade in top-class racehorses as potential stallions.
Well, an interesting time for turf horses in America with that sale coming up. And it's always an interesting time when Saratoga comes around, especially for Faisik Tipton with the Saratoga sale August 7th and 8th this year, as Mr. Collier has pointed out to us. Terrence, it's been a lot of fun chatting with you today. Good luck with the sale. Good luck with all your future endeavors at Faisik Tipton. And thanks so much for spending some time with us.
Well, Bill, I hope you'll come over and see us at Saratoga. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Terrence.